Today on Maine Calling, Maine Secretary of State Shenna Bellows. Last month, Shenna Bellows took the oath of office for her third term as Secretary of State. She vowed to focus on reducing bureaucracy and modernizing systems. It's her job to make sure elections and the State Department of Motor Vehicles both run smoothly. It's also her job to implement voting law, no matter how controversial. Just yesterday, she certified petitions for a referendum that would require photo identification at polling places. And she's in charge of implementing Real ID. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, Shenna Bellows discusses those hot-button issues and more. Plus, we'll ask her how Trump administration orders concerning cybersecurity and voting affect Maine. Maine Calling is just ahead.
Maine Calling is made possible in part by support from Maine Farmland Trust, working with farmers to grow the future of farming and food in Maine. Learn more at mainefarmlandtrust.org/learn. Maine Health, where care teams provide expert coordinated care focused on your overall wellness to help you be your healthiest self. MaineHealth.org. And by Maine Seacoast Mission, delivering health care, education, and support to islands and coastal Downeast communities. Learn more at seacoastmission.org.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. The Department of the Secretary of State oversees voting and elections, as well as the Bureau of Motor Vehicles, the State Archives, and more. Today, we'll talk with Maine Secretary of State Shenna Bellows about the top issues that she is working on and that have to do with those places. We invite you to join the conversation. Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. Welcome back to Maine Calling, Secretary Bellows.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you.
So I understand that this is your third term, and as you were sworn in, you have been talking about your commitment this time around to reduce bureaucracy. That's a hard word to say today. Reduce bureaucracy and modernize systems. What do you mean by that? What specifically do you want to do?
Make government work for the people. So a perfect example are appointments at the Bureau of Motor Vehicles. When I came into office and I toured the state, I saw long lines and long wait times in our branches. And our customer service reps are working so hard to help people. And I thought, why can't you just go online, pick an appointment time, and go in and get out in 5 minutes? And now you can. So that's an example of technology modernization, a very simple thing, so that people who are working full time, people who are caring for family, can organize their schedules and avoid those wait times at the Bureau of Motor Vehicle branches. Another example, I remember my first day in office, a car dealer called me and he said, Shenna, you have to fix titles. And I said, okay, tell me more. So as head of the Bureau of Motor Vehicles, I oversee vehicle titles, which are your ownership documents for your car or truck. And he said, you know, there's a backlog. It's weeks and weeks. And that means I can't move vehicles off my lot until I get that title in hand. So we put together an electronic lien and titling working group. And we set up a solution for the dealers and the lenders, an electronic lien solution. And we eliminated those backlogs. So that's good for business. It's good for consumers. And it's yet another example of modernizing systems to make government work for people. On voting, I'm really proud that we implemented automatic voter registration at the Bureau of Motor Vehicles. When you're proving your identity and your residency, if you're a US citizen, you have that opportunity to register to vote at our branches now. And then this past year, online voter registration last February. And that was phenomenal. We had over 36,000 Mainers utilized the online voter registration system to register to vote for the first time or update their registration after they moved. So those are just a few examples of how we can make technology work for people.
So what do you want to do next? What's the next step?
Well, we are working right now on a mobile bureau motor vehicle. So imagine the BMV RV pulling into a veteran's home or a senior residential community, or maybe a small town or a county that doesn't have a BMV, like Dover Foxcroft in Piscataquis County or Belfast, and opening our doors and having people walk right in and be able to renew their license or get their license or their re vehicle registered or submit that title paperwork. So being able to bring the BMV to the people. So we're hopeful. In fact, that vehicle is being manufactured right now, and we're hopeful to have that on the road by the fall. We're also working on some kiosks. Imagine if you could go to the Hannaford and get your registration stickers or again, renew your license. So that's a twinkle in my eye that we're working on right now.
And what about for voting?
So for voting, we're working on an updated central voter registration system because we are still operating on our original central voter registration system. That's a system that has all of the voter information in the state. It has everyone who's registered and then all of their history, when they voted, in which elections. And all of our clerks are accessing that system on a regular basis. It's how we track everything about elections. So we're still operating on our original system. It's now over 20 years old. And the goal is prior to 2026 to have a new, secure, central voter registration system with increased functionality and protections that make it easier for our clerks to use. So that's the next goal for voting. We're also hoping to update those tabulators. So we did get some complaints about the long lines at the polls on election day. Part of that was a function of having two ballots. If you were having to feed two ballots through the tabulator at your polling place, that's going to take twice as long for all the voters to do as usual. But it's also a function of the fact that those machines are just over a decade old. And so we'll be going out for bid and hopefully replacing those tabulators that read the ballots prior to 2026. At least that's the goal.
By dint of the nature of your office, you're often at the center of controversial issues, and this week is no exception. Just yesterday, you certified signatures on petitions to require a photo ID at the polling place, among other things. So why don't you tell me what voters are likely to vote on in November, because the legislature we know is unlikely to pass this. What are we likely to be voting on? What is the meat of this proposal?
Sure. So this proposal is rather large. It's not just a strict voter identification card requirement at the polling place when people go to vote. It's also rolling back absentee voting in a couple of ways. For example, it shortens that period. It pushes back the deadline for doing that in-person absentee voting prior to an election. And it eliminates ongoing absentee voting for our seniors and people with disabilities, so they can't just automatically get their absentee ballot anymore. It prohibits the towns from including postage on the absentee return envelopes, and it limits who can and how an absentee ballot can be requested from the clerk. So those are some pretty big changes that would certainly place limitations on absentee voting. It also politicizes the process a little bit because it replaces the functions of some of the clerks with more partisan operatives. So right now, you can place your absentee ballot in a drop box. There are security requirements under state law, and most towns across the state do have an absentee ballot drop box. And the clerk or other municipal official deputized by the clerk retrieves those ballots. And there are procedures for retrieving the ballots and tracking those ballots. Under this proposal, that would have to be a Republican and Democratic partisan retrieving the ballots. Certainly questionable from my perspective about whether having party operatives handle those absentee ballots and do that retrieval is better than our local clerks. I don't think it is, but that is part of the proposal. And so I think for voters, they're going to need to read the details. It's a big bill. There's a lot in it, and make their own decision about whether they're going to vote yes or no. But it certainly will make the ballot. I found 86,904 valid signatures, and again, my job as Secretary of State is to facilitate access to the ballot and then make sure that voters have the facts.
Okay, I know that supporters of this say that this would promote voting security. Opponents, including the League of Women Voters, say this amounts to voter suppression. So I'm wondering if you're taking a stand on this.
I certainly have deep concerns about this referendum because I do think that it may undermine our elections and knock us off of that first place role in our elections. Remember, Maine was number one in the nation in 2022 in voter participation. And in 2024, we broke yet another record in terms of the overall number of Mainers participating in our elections. We don't know yet how we stack up against the other states. That will come out this spring. But that has been a function of our safe and secure elections. It's been a function of the excellent work of our local clerks and our really strong election administration laws. So anytime you do things like roll back the absentee voting period or make it harder for people to request an absentee ballot, you're going to have an impact on people's ability to cast their ballot. And that could have negative consequences in terms of turnout. And we have concerns about that. With regards to voter ID, reasonable people can disagree about when identity should be shown at the polls. Certainly in Maine, we do require that you demonstrate proof of identity and residency when you register to vote. We don't require it when you go to vote. Now, some people say, well, what's the big deal of showing your license? Well, you know, what we've seen in other states is both it's contributed to those long lines. Again, if you have those folks checking in the voters, having to review IDs, it just by its nature is going to increase that time. But more importantly and more concerningly, sometimes that means people who are legitimate United States citizens, maybe they voted their whole lives, but, you know, maybe your mom or dad gave up their license because they can no longer drive and suddenly it's expired and they go to vote on election day and they can't. And so that's some of the concerns that you have is just the real potential consequences of people getting turned away from the polls when they go to vote because they don't have the right type of ID or the proper or just quite frankly, up-to-date ID. So it will require more thinking ahead and more preparation. And again, it will impact certain populations, especially in Maine, our senior citizens who are no longer driving most dramatically.
I am another issue that is controversial that your office oversees is Real ID. Shenna, I was curious when this was proposed by Congress, and I realized it was 2005. It's been 20 years. And I know in a prior job, you know, a long time ago, you opposed Real ID, but now you're in the position of making sure that it happens and it happens smoothly. In the meantime, the Maine legislature is debating this yet again. So we know that the deadline is May 7th. We know that the deadline might be postponed again. What is your advice to Maine citizens?
I think in my first year on the job, I may have been on this show telling people about a federal deadline for Real ID in May, and then they kicked the can down the road and pushed it back. I may be getting the year wrong, but I know it has been pushed back at least once during my tenure and certainly pushed back for 20 years, right? And so when I was head of the ACLU, I led the campaign against Real ID in the legislature for concerns for two reasons, right? First, in a free society, in a democracy, the idea that the federal government would say your papers, please, or that you'd have to have what essentially is a national ID to travel about the country raises concerns about freedom and liberty. And then the second concern was a very pragmatic one. The original Real ID law was suggesting that you'd have to upload your authentication documents into a federal database, a one-stop shop for identity thieves. Now, over time, the federal government has changed some of those aspects of the Real ID. It's no longer a single ID. It's implemented by the states. It's standards for licenses and IDs. And those authentication documents are being housed at the state level rather than the federal level. That doesn't mean hackers can't potentially compromise those state databases. We work really hard. I've got a great cybersecurity team that works hard to preserve the security of all of our data. But that Real ID question remains. Now, as head of the Bureau of Motor Vehicles, I want Mainers to have choices. I don't want Mainers to show up when or if the federal government decides to enforce this and not be able to take that flight, whether it's the dream vacation or the necessary business trip or visiting a loved one in a family emergency. So my message to Mainers has been, look, there is a new deadline. This time the federal government says they're serious. They're not pushing it back. And it's just important to be prepared. Right now, 25% of Mainers do have the real ID, either driver license or ID card. That means 3 out of 4 Mainers don't. Now, hopefully that 75% of Mainers have a passport or passport card or other federally recognized identity document just to preserve their options when they're flying domestically or when they're going into a federal building in the future. On the other hand, there's a new administration, there's a new Congress. They have another opportunity 20 years later to reconsider. And what I've been advising advocates and legislators from both sides of the aisle is please direct your concerns about Real ID to the federal government and encourage the Trump administration to consider rescinding that requirement, encourage Congress to consider repealing that requirement. Because to just tell the Bureau of Motor Vehicles that we can't issue those Real IDs anymore to people, I'm not sure that that's going to be something that the Mainer, you know, showing up for that business trip or that dream vacation is going to appreciate not being able to get a real ID if the federal government does, in fact, require it for domestic travel.
Well, speaking of the federal government, speaking of the Trump administration, I'm thinking about election security, and I'm just going to go ahead and read a couple lines. This is from Slate, the online publication, an article that just appeared. On Friday, the acting director of Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency sent a memo to all agency staff notifying them that all election security activities would be paused pending the results of an internal investigation. The memo also stated the administration was cutting off all funds to the Election Infrastructure Information Sharing and Analysis Center, a Department of Homeland Security-funded organization that helps state and local officials monitor, analyze, and respond to cyber attacks targeting the nation's election hardware and software. So I know this is really sort of hot off the presses, Secretary Bellows. This all happened on Friday. How is it affecting what you do?
So I serve on the Election Infrastructure Information Sharing and Analysis Center. I've done so for several years, and it's important for people to know what that is. It is a federal, state, local collaboration of election and cybersecurity officials from across the country. It's set up by the federal government pursuant to statute passed by Congress, and it by design is equal numbers of Republicans and Democrats. And the chairmanship of that EII SAC Executive Committee, which is run by the states and locals, flips back and forth between Democrats and Republicans every other year. The chair is a Democrat, the vice chair a Republican, and then it switches. And so I happen to be the national chair of the Election Infrastructure Information Sharing and Analysis Center because of my work on election security and cybersecurity over the last 4 years. And I serve on that. My vice chair is a county official, a Republican county official from Florida. And my Republican secretary counterpart is Secretary Phil McGrane of Idaho. And the work that the EII SAC does in terms of election security and the work that the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency does is really just core security operations. It's not partisan in any way. I'll give you a few examples. The Cybersecurity Infrastructure Security Agency, CISA, has worked in Maine to conduct what's called secure at first entry assessments. These are safe assessments of our clerks' offices and polling places. So clerks were able to sign up through my office to have an expert come and evaluate the security of their offices and their polling places to recommend changes that the clerks and municipalities could make to the polling places to protect security. This is a huge service that's happening, was happening all across the country leading up to the 2024 election that is now on pause.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, no,
I can share more.
If the funds have been cut off, Secretary Bellows, what does that mean? Does that mean elections are less secure?
I'm concerned that it does. On election day, the EISAC ran a nationwide situation room. My cybersecurity staff was in that situation room. And so as election offices were getting targeted by cyber criminals and hackers with malicious IP addresses, trying to conduct denial of service attacks or other attacks on our cybersecurity infrastructure, in the situation room, they were sharing those malicious domains, those IP addresses. And my team was able to then blacklist those IP addresses to prevent attacks on Maine's system. So that's a very concrete, very techie example of how the EISAC and CISA are protecting the state network and the cybersecurity here in our state. And without funding, without coordination of that at the federal level, that service goes away and that makes us less secure and more vulnerable, whether it's to a denial of service attack or ransomware attack or other attack that might bring down state systems on election day.
We're speaking with Maine Secretary of State, Shanna Bellows. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Maine Secretary of State Shanna Bellows is with us today to talk about the latest news on voting rights and regulations, licensing and IDs, and of course, to answer your questions. What do you want to know about voter ID, real ID, ranked choice voting, anything to do with motor vehicles? Of course, we're not going to have time for all of them, but you can send a brief email, talk@mainepublic.org, comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Before we get to, Secretary Bellows, before we get to the very good questions already coming in from our audience, I want to ask you about something fun. You're planning something fun for April. What is it?
Oh, I'm so excited about this. So America's turning 250 years old in 2026. And here in Maine, we have Maine's 250th birthday commission. It's called the Maine Semiquincentennial Commission. And we're looking at how we honor our history, how we tell the whole story of the last 250 years of our country's founding and history. And so on April 18th and 19th is the commemorative event, 250 years since Paul Revere's famous ride. Now, of course, the reason that ride is so famous is because of the famous poem by Henry Wadsworth Longfellow about Paul Revere's ride and the two lights. So across the nation, in state capitals, on April 18th, the commissions that are working on these commemorations will be lighting two lights. And we are encouraging schools, towns, historical buildings across the state to think about joining in with us in lighting lights in your local municipalities, perhaps in schools, reading that poem. We have a number of Paul Revere bells across the state. So we're going to be reaching out to folks about potentially ringing the Paul Revere bell.
That's right. I knew Bath was. What are there others?
Oh my goodness, there are. There's a whole list that we put together. I think because he was located in Boston, there were a number of locations, and I am blanking now.
Oh, that's okay. We have plenty of questions, Secretary Bellows. We'll look that up ourselves. Here's an email from John. My driver's license expires this summer, and I plan to make an appointment soon for a real ID license renewal. I understand a passport can be used as documentation. My passport expired in the midst of COVID and I haven't gotten it renewed. Can a fairly recent but expired passport still be used, or does it have to be currently active? If my passport is not acceptable, what other options can I use?
So we have this great checklist on our website that has the options because unfortunately it does have to be unexpired, and the requirements for real ID are set by federal law, not state law, because these are federal requirements. So what I encourage you to do is go onto our website, check out that list of requirements. A certified birth certificate will do, and Maine Vital Records does a great job of getting back to people if you were born in Maine and need to get your certified birth certificate here in our state. But check out the full checklist on our website. You can Google Real ID and Maine, and you will see all of that information, and you'll see the button that says schedule an appointment, because that's the easiest thing to do. And a friend of mine texted me last week. She was in and out in 5 minutes. And that's our hope for you, is to minimize the amount of time that you have to spend at the Bureau of Motor Vehicles so you can get what you need and move on with your life.
An email here from Jared. For the last handful of major national elections, one of the worries around voter fraud has centered around the electronics used to process ballots. Can you talk about the selection process for finding vendors for these systems and what safeguards are in place or planned to ensure that voters from all political backgrounds can trust the results?
Great question. Two things. First, it's really important to know that these tabulators are like modern day abacuses. They're just high-tech counting machines. They're never connected to the internet in any way, shape, or form. And so they are tested both at the state level and at the municipal level. And that testing, it's called logic and accuracy testing, is a public process. So we had folks in 2024 go and watch the testing of those machines to make sure that they were reading test ballots properly. With regards to the request for proposal process, state procurement laws require a very specific and robust procurement process that is very open. It's something that people can check out, the criteria that we're using to solicit bidders. And one of those criteria will certainly be that it's certified equipment. So the Election Assistance Commission issues standards with all of this equipment. And we in Maine currently are using ES&S. They are a company that produces tabulators that is certified, and that requirement will continue.
We'll go to Betty, who's calling from Topsom. Hi, Betty. Go ahead.
Hi, thank you for taking my question. Your department is responsible for a lot of data, and I'm wondering whether it's possible to keep Elon Musk and his henchmen out of that data?
Certainly. Our department is a state department, and the federal government does not have access to the data that we keep, either the voter registration data that we keep in our Division of Elections or the Bureau of Motor Vehicles data that we keep at the Bureau of Motor Vehicles. Now, we do exchange information across states about license histories. So if you're coming from a new state and you're applying for your Maine driver license, we're checking to see, are you in good standing in your state of origin, or do you have an outstanding driver license in another state? Similarly, after every election, we exchange data with other states around voter registration and voter participation to make sure that no one is voting in both, say, Maine and Florida in the same election. So that data exchange happens between the states, but the federal government does not have access to our databases, nor should they. So people can rest assured about that.
Betty, thank you for your question. We're going to go to Allison, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Allison. Go ahead.
Hi, thank you. I have a question about the voter ID initiative that was mentioned earlier. And I've worked a lot in elections in the campaign finance world. So, you know, in and out of many elections in many different roles. But the greatest, most gratifying thing I've ever done in elections is to help people with their absentee ballot when they're unable to vote at the polls. And I'm really concerned about this bill because it seems to me that it's burdening an already complex process, and I cannot imagine what the rationale is. So some people might not know that to help somebody with an absentee ballot, you know, say on election day, somebody who's stuck in the hospital or, you know, stuck at home, there's many, many steps, and they're frankly kind of a nuisance, but every step ensures accountability. You know, like, I'm not a lawyer, so when I help somebody with an absentee, I have to have a witness. It involves, you know, a trip to town hall or city hall to actually get the ballot after the person has requested it. So it usually involves two visits to the person's home or the hospital, wherever, to first they request the ballot, and then I bring it to them and they can fill it out. So, you know, there are a lot of checks and balances. It's, like I said, kind of a nuisance. It takes hours often, but it's the only way that these folks are going to be able to cast their ballot. And I just, you know, the experiences I've had helping people have been so moving, so poignant. Just, you know, voting is so important to people. You know, once a pair of sisters, one of whom was on their deathbed, the other was their caretaker, My witness was a hospice nurse. I mean, very poignant moments. Another was an elderly woman who was stuck in the hospital for several days extra after she'd had surgery. A little problem came up, and she didn't want to miss the election. And that, you know, she was at Maine Medical Center, which is near where I live. I had to drive to Standish to get her ballot. I mean, it's a nuisance, but it's important. And
Allison, thank you. Yeah, Shanna, your response.
So I think that's such a poignant story, particularly, you know, there's a portion of this proposal that would prohibit immediate family members from dropping off each other's ballots. So, I mean, this happens all the time, right? Like, you know, my husband might drop off my ballot and his on his way to work, or, you know, for that person in the hospital, eliminating the ability of a loved one to be able to return that absentee ballot is concerning. So certainly there are provisions, and this is where you can go on the website, you can read the legislation that's behind the initiative. You've got plenty of time before November, assuming that the legislature moves that out directly to the people. And that's really, the legislature has two choices or three choices. They can pass it, they can send it out to the people, or they can propose a third alternative question, but that almost never happens. And really encourage people to go on the website and check out this legislation, because there is a lot to it.
Allison, thanks for your call. We'll move on to Rich in Moosehead. Hi, Rich, go ahead.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I'd like to thank Secretary Bellows, because her office helped me as part of a whistleblower retaliation. The town of Greenville was denying me access to the polls, and your office allowed me to move my vote to a town where I wouldn't face retaliation, and I was able to vote that day as well. So I just wanted to say thank you for the service you do for the citizens of the state of Maine.
It's always nice to hear feedback about the customer service that our state election officials and the Bureau of Motor Vehicles provide to our citizens. So thank you.
Thanks, Rich. Let's see. We'll go to Mary calling from Portland. Hi, Mary. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. First of all, I wanted to say thank you. I did go to Motor Vehicle the last time, and it was just a breeze. Number two, I moved here from another state where we had polling cards, and I was shocked when I didn't have to show any ID or have a polling card. And I don't think it's a bad thing. You have to have an ID to get on an airplane. You have to have an ID to buy a bottle of wine. And I think elections are important, and to have to show some form of identification is a good thing.
Yeah, Mary, thank you. And I'm sure the closer we get to November, the more we're going to hear people's experience with it. Shanna, do you have a comment for Mary?
Yeah, one thing that's important for folks to know about the process is the legislature can't change or fix this legislation. So it has a voter ID requirement in it. Some of the elements of that ID may or may not be controversial, but it also has all of these other provisions that impact absentee voting, drop boxes, and the process of elections themselves. The legislature is not permitted to keep what they like and eliminate what they don't like. They can't amend this legislation before it goes to the people. If it were to pass, then they might have that opportunity, but what they also can't do is they can't actually even pass a voter ID bill themselves, even if they wanted to, without it becoming what's called a competing measure. And that's just a constitutional provision that we have around citizens' initiatives. So again, I think reasonable people may agree to disagree on whether you should have to show some sort of form of ID at the polls. I personally don't support measures that eliminate the rights of using tribal IDs or student IDs and then allow, you know, gun permits or other types of licenses. You know, I think this bill would allow a learner's permit, which doesn't actually have a photograph on it. So there's some questions there in terms of what type of ID is or isn't permissible. And but the legislature doesn't have the option of fixing it. It goes to the people as is.
Mary, thanks for your call. Dan on Facebook wants to know, why does the state site not allow comments? And so I'm thinking she's talking about the website at your office.
I think they're probably talking about Facebook, although our website doesn't allow public comments either. So for the first few years of my tenure on our Facebook page, people could comment whatever they wanted. Unfortunately, we saw two things happen. It appeared that somebody may have created a bot that put the same nonsensical comments on over and over and over again. And others were utilizing profanity and other things that are impermissible on a government site. And my staff was spending hours just hiding things that were profane not permissible. And we simply don't have that capacity. So rather than discriminate against people or try to interpret their comments, we just shut those comments off. Now, what we haven't done is remove the ability to message us. So you can send us a message, you can call us, you can email us, and certainly you can share your views about us on your own social media pages or other places online. But we're utilizing that Facebook page for purposes of sharing information and making sure the public is informed.
We're speaking with Maine's Secretary of State, Shenna Pelos, who is in her third term. If you'd like to join the conversation, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org or find us on social media. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, Maine's Secretary of State, Shenna Pelos. She's here to answer your questions about elections, real ID, and other matters in the news. You can share your comments and questions. Send an email to talk@mainepublic.org. You can also post on Facebook or Instagram or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Shenna Pelos, I have to ask you, you made big news a while ago when you opposed Donald Trump's name being on the ballot in Maine, which of course was overturned in the courts. And I'm wondering if that's had any repercussions for you.
Well, in the short term, my information was doxed, being posted on the dark web with exhortations to target me. My family and members of my staff and I myself received threats of violence, and my home was swatted. And my mom was like, "What's swatting?" And I was like, "Well, that's a hoax call designed to elicit a SWAT team response, a strong law enforcement response." And the good news is state and federal law enforcement working together apprehended the perpetrators of that swatting. And it turned out that they were allegedly foreign nationals. And I'm really impressed and just pleased that the Department of Justice and the authorities worked so hard to bring the perpetrators to justice and now are moving forward to hold them accountable.
Can you say what country?
Yes. So one of them was from Serbia. They were from Eastern Europe.
Go on.
And one of the things that, you know, 1 year later, I think about the era that we're in, and there seems to be some widespread fear held, including, you know, members of Congress expressing fears for their family's safety or their own safety. And I think it's really important to recognize that all of us have agency in this democracy, right? We all have power in our communities to speak up, to speak out. And the online trolls, people, you know, overseas or in basements targeting us with threats of violence or, you know, the swatting that happened on Election Day right here in Maine, they are trying to sow chaos and fear and distrust, and they're trying to chill people and dissuade people from getting involved and speaking up and standing up. And I think my message is, you know, reflecting on what happened to me a year ago and reflecting on, you know, some of what we're seeing at the national level is we're in a time where all of us should recognize that most people are good. You know, in my situation, it wasn't my neighbor. It wasn't people in Maine. It was others trying to target us and trying to intimidate us and trying to, I don't know, change the actions of a Secretary of State, right? Undermine our democracy. So I think now is the moment for relationship building, for finding community, to joining together to do the right thing. And there are no simple solutions in a democracy to fixing the problems that we see before us. There are no magic saviors. I think standing up for democracy starts with each one of us.
We'll go to Jamie calling from Orono. Hi, Jamie. Go ahead.
Good morning. It is an honor to speak with both of you, and I'd like to say thanks for the great jobs you do. My question is about the Pine Tree license plate reservation system, particularly vanity plates. It seems that the vanity plate fee of $25 is itself a reservation. And so I'd like to present a scenario. If I have a vanity plate, let's say it says Jimmy, and I do not reserve Jimmy, and no one else reserves Jimmy, what license plate do I get? What Pine Tree plate do I get?
Oh, well, when you show up to register your vehicle and you haven't reserved Jimmy, you'll get a standard Pine Tree plate. Because just think about it from a production perspective. We have to produce over 1 million new license plates, and it is more cost effective to just run those in huge batches with randomly generated number letter combinations. Those are your standard license plates. So that is cost effective for the state. But to custom order Jimmy, for example, and congratulations to Jimmy out there for getting that on your license plate, that has a cost, because then we have to specifically ask the company to produce that unique plate and then package it and mail it to the specific customer. So the $25 is basically a custom order fee for whatever you might want, whether it's your existing vanity plate. There are people across Maine who have received those low digit plates bestowed upon them by prior secretaries or passed down to them from their grandparents. They have to custom order those because that is a custom order. So that's what the $25 fee is. And you can go online and do it to make it quick and efficient and not have the headache of temporarily having that standard number and then having to go back and custom order what you want.
There you go. Jamie, thanks for your question. Let's see. We're going to go to David in Scarborough. Hi, David. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you, Secretary Bellows, for the excellent, clear explanations of your work, which we have respect. I am wondering, why is it that one political party in Maine and elsewhere wants to restrict voting? What are they afraid of?
I can't speak for anyone who wants to restrict voting, because I don't want to restrict voting. I want Maine to continue to be the national leader in voter participation. I want to continue to have free, safe, and secure elections. And I've spent the last 4 years working on physical security and cybersecurity of our elections to make sure that everyone can trust in our election integrity. And I think there are conversations that we can continue to have about strengthening security of our elections, but the initiative process, by its nature under the Constitution, puts a pause on those conversations, because the legislature can't pass anything until the people vote on this question. So I encourage people to read the details. I have concerns that this referendum will actually potentially undermine our elections by rolling back absentee voting, by restricting drop boxes, by prohibiting towns from putting postage on the absentee ballot return envelopes, and by politicizing the process. But that will be determined by the voters in November. And then perhaps a year from now, we can resume conversations about what are the common sense measures that everyone can agree on we need to continue to do to strengthen our elections so that we preserve our democracy.
David, thanks for your question. We'll go to VZ and Jane. Hi, Jane. Go ahead.
Hi. I have a question and an invitation for your last caller. If people want to help folks get to the polls on voting day, or even go pick up a absentee ballot and return it, in York, I have read, and I think I read this on Reasons to Be Cheerful. If any of your listeners aren't familiar with Reasons to Be Cheerful, please go there. I read about York. Little tiny York has 400 volunteer citizens available to drive people anywhere they want to go, the doctor, out to lunch with their friends, to their place of worship, to their municipal building to vote. And if York can organize 400, and I would like to know how they do it. They must have a great dispatch system, and they would probably share it with anyone who calls and asked. And any community in this state could organize a cadre of volunteer drivers to get people to the polls. That's how much in favor of free and open voting I am. Thank you very much.
Love that. I love the idea of small towns, people organizing, coming together to make our communities stronger and better. And so if you're someone who's viewing some of what's happening at the national level, for example, the defunding of election security nationwide with dismay or alarm, I think the answer is coming together in community at the local level and thinking about what can we do to continue to support our local communities, support our farmers, our schools, our elections. I think people coming together to do good, to make a difference, that's what's going to prevail. It always has.
Jane, thank you. An email here from Rob. I went through all the hoops to get a real ID star on my license from another state when moving to Maine. It was unacceptable to the Maine DMV. What's the use of getting that if no one recognizes it?
So I encourage you to reach out to my office. You can call us. You can send us an email to sos.office@maine.gov. And we want to hear from you, your specific circumstances. So send me your name and your date of birth, and we'll look into the issue because we do want to help you get what you need.
An email here from Marianne. My understanding is that impersonating someone else and voting in their name would be a Class C crime in Maine, a felony that carries a maximum penalty of $5,000 fine and 5 years in prison. So I'm going to pose that as a question. Is she right?
Voting in the name of another is a crime. Voter fraud is a crime. And you will be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law and have a felony if you vote improperly or if you vote in the name of another.
Yeah. How often has that happened in Maine in your tenure?
In my tenure, we had two prosecutions pursuant to the 2020 election where one person intercepted her roommate's ballot and cast it in her name. Another person voted twice. Both of those were prosecuted. And so I think that's really important to recognize that it is very rare that people do engage in voter fraud, but when they do, it is a crime and they will be investigated and prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law. And if anyone has specific knowledge of specific individuals that they believe to have committed a crime, then you have an obligation. And I encourage you to report that to the authorities because we have zero tolerance for that. Voting is really important. And I think everyone can agree that the integrity of our elections is fundamental to everything that we care about.
Tucker on Facebook makes this point, says the proposal to remove drop boxes hurts the disability community in Maine. It just makes voting harder. So this is not something we've talked about yet. This is, though, is a provision of what was just, in the petition drive that will lead to a referendum in November.
That's right. So there are limitations on the drop boxes that are placed by this referendum. And we do believe the drop boxes have made a huge difference for people with disabilities and with Mainers who are commuting long distances for work. Now, it's not a complete elimination of that section of law. That are changes of that section of law. It actually eliminates the requirement that my office approve those drop boxes, and it limits municipalities to a single drop box and also limits where those drop boxes may be located.
An email here from John. I am a lung transplant recipient and would like to know how I can update my license without going to the DMV.
If you can go online, if you can't renew a real ID or a real ID driver license online, but if it's a standard Maine driver license, you can do that online. And if you want to become an organ donor, please do. The Bureau of Motor Vehicles, we're really proud. We're the leading state in New England for organ donation, and you can register to be an organ donor online if you're not currently and you want to make that choice to potentially save a life.
Oh, that's interesting. If you already have a driver's license, you can do that. How is that then shown on your driver's license?
Well, it would be shown the next time that you renew your license. You wouldn't automatically get the heart on your license, but you would join that organ donation registry.
All right. Well, I am so happy you were able to spend an hour with us. Secretary of State Shenna Bellows, thank you, as always, for coming on Maine Calling. As you can see, so many audience members have questions for you. Today's sound engineer is Jane Donahue. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. You can visit the Maine Calling website to listen to past programs or sign up for our free weekly newsletter. Every week, our newsletter will tell you what's coming up next week on Maine Calling. Tomorrow on the program, we will hear from musician and storyteller Samuel James. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.